SeatGeek is the newest sponsor of Off the Ball Network. If you're listening to this podcast, there's a 99.9% chance you love sports. But watching these games in person is super expensive. To help ease the pain in your wallet, use the promo code OffTheBallNetwork to get a $20 discount for first-time users of SeatGeek. Your next best night ever is waiting, and SeatGeek has the tickets. The Up and Under podcast is proud to be a part of Off the Ball Network. For all things basketball, football, soccer, golf, baseball, sports betting, you name it, go to offtheballnetwork.com and check out the amazing articles posted by writers of the network, including yours truly, and the other podcasts on basically every sport under the sun. Off the Ball Network, your home for quality sports and entertainment content.
I'm ready with y'all, I guess.
All right, ready?
Yep.
All right, 3, 2, whatever.
What is good, everybody? It's your boy Francis Carlotta on episode 55 of the Up and Under podcast. Yeah, I mean, I think at this point our podcast just operates on 3 month intervals at this rate. I know that was my goal to not have that be the case, but you know, time. And we're all busy people, so I will try and be better. I'm taking the bar again in February, so I don't know. We'll see how this goes. And Tigers basketball is still going strong with an interesting new pickup amid the Jordan Brown hoopla. So how I described it on Twitter. So I'll keep it with that. The Jordan Brown hoopla. So Tigers basketball is always interesting, but you know, still the NBA podcast, the Up and Under. And as a lover of the NBA, as a lover of basketball, I'm just happy to be back on the pod talking the NBA. Unfortunately, no Connor Byrne, no Grant Hechinger, but I am joined by Canada's finest, Kenneth Cotterill. Welcome, Kenneth, to the podcast again. Well, I think now you have set the record for most appearances on the pod. I think you've officially done it. So how does that feel?
Well, I mean, it's a great honor. I understand why you would want to have me back as often as you do. It's great content. Always results in, I'm sure, hundreds, if not thousands, of listeners every time.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm a huge draw. I'm a huge crowd draw. Everyone knows that. And driest Canadian, that does describe my throat right now, given how I've been feeling the last 72 hours. We were chatting before we went live or recording here that, you know, in 15 hours, I'm hopping on a flight to Mexico with my wife, and I have not felt the greatest. So we're just trying to all the home remedies to get through, but we've been trying to do this podcast for a couple of weeks. We finally found a time, and you know, I had to pull through and tough it out and get on the pod. So appreciate you having me on.
Always, man. Always. Yeah. As you said, we've been trying to do this for a while. I think we both were hungover.
We've been doing a lot of Sunday celebrating, and yeah. I get yours for Michigan. I might just have a problem. Yeah. Like I guess the in-season tournament victory, because, you know, growing up as a young Lakers fan, that was what I always dreamed of, was the Lakers in-season tournament banner being hung. And so now that that's finally come through, I guess I celebrated a little bit too hard. So, and shout out to your Michigan Wolverines, you know, beating Ohio State third straight year. That's huge. Taking on Bama.
Yeah, cool.
How we feeling?
I'm nervous. I mean, it's Bama. I don't know what you want to say. I think it'll be a great game. I don't think it'll be a blowout either way. I think it's going to be a really good game. People forget this is still the same Bama team that took a miracle to beat Auburn, struggled against USF, and like they're not superhuman Bama of old, but they're still damn good. So we'll see. I think it'll be really fun. Shout out to Mo again. And Jeff at Off the Ball Network, two great fans of Ohio. I'm sorry, but I'm not. I'd be lying. I'm not sorry at all.
Sorry, and I mean,
no, I'm not. I'm not sorry.
Are you of the opinion that the winner of that game like, not to discount Washington and Texas, but it does feel like the winner of that game is going to be the front runner heading into the national championship game.
Yeah, probably. I do think the winner would be the front runner. I mean, especially if Michigan beats Alabama and they already are the one seed, they're probably going to be the odds-on favorite in the national championship game. I think Texas beats Washington. I know we're getting on a tangent. I think Texas beats them. So I think they're better on in the trenches on both sides of the ball. Washington established a run game against Oregon, but I think Texas D-line, they can run the ball as well. They have Quinn Ewers, who's throwing the ball as well as anybody in college football. Penix had a great game against – well, I wouldn't say he had a great game against Oregon. He had a good game. And I think that's kind of been the trend with Michael Penix recently. He's just been having – a lot of good games after his like insanely hot start throughout the year. So he's still really good, but I don't know. I think Texas beats him. And I think Michigan, Texas, if that's the case, I think will be another great game. And if Michigan is a national champion, then I'll be
the very last episode until like February from you. Right.
No question. Yeah, it probably won't be till I'll be celebrating for a while if Michigan wins a national. Dude, if they just beat Bama, I'll be just ecstatic, because you know I'm from Memphis. All the SEC fans, everyone thinks that Big Ten football doesn't hold a stick to the SEC, and like if they just beat Bama, I'll be insufferable on Twitter. Like I won't be able to. No one could talk to me. No one could talk to me on Twitter if they beat Alabama, but. Anyway, let's get into it. Let's talk NBA. So, Kenneth, you've got a podcast that's been resurrected, for lack of a better term, right? Give a quick plug, name of the podcast.
Yeah, Shooter Shoot Basketball Podcast 2.0. We brought it back after a couple-year hiatus. It's where I used to talk all my basketball in the past. Then we went the gambling route, and then kind of felt like I needed to bring a basketball outlet back. I would say that it's resurrected. Quite frankly, we put out an episode and then we've been on a bit of a hiatus over the last 6 weeks. So we're looking to do a full launch in the new year, but at @shooters_pod on all social platforms. Going to get better on posting more in the new year once things slow down a bit, especially as we head into holiday season.
It's always tough.
So it's tough to find time to record from time to time, as you said.
Yep, 100%. Well, again, either way, Shooter Shoot is still great to hear that podcast is coming back. That was my first introduction to even you as a human being on that podcast. What is that, 2 years ago at this point? It's crazy how time flies like that. But it's great to see your pod coming back. With that in mind, you got some power rankings out. So I'm trying to figure out the best way to present it. Should we just list all 30 teams so the listeners are aware? I can list them in order, or how do you think is the best way to present these your power rankings?
So maybe let's go top 10, and then we'll kind of discuss the middle of the list, and then after that we can touch on the cellar dwellers, I guess we would call them.
Sure.
So I'll give you top five to start. We went Boston at 1, Milwaukee at 2, Minnesota at 3, Philadelphia at 4, and Denver at 5. I think those are who I would consider to be the elite of the elite playing right now. Now, Denver gets a little bit of the bump being the defending champs from last year. Not that they've had a slow start, but by their standards, I guess you call it a little bit of a slower start coming off that championship. Boston, getting Drew Holiday. I mean, they're just – and Porzingis. This lineup is crazy for Boston. I don't know who's going to be able to knock them off. Milwaukee getting Lillard. They lost Drew, added Lillard. You got Minnesota, finally Anthony Edwards. They've decided this is his team, which is probably what it should have been last year. And now that they're finally putting the ball entirely in his hands and they're going to go as far as he takes them, I think we're seeing the byproduct of that. You got Philadelphia, no James Harden, but no problems there. Tyrese Maxey has stepped up in a big way, Embiid playing at an MVP-type level once again. And then you got Denver defending champs at 5. So thoughts on top 5?
I understand why you have Denver so low. I think they're really missing Bruce Brown, man. That bench unit is just not the same bench unit at all. You're really hoping for big contributions from the Julian Strothers of the world, the Christian Browns of the world, like that. You're really hoping for big things from them. Peyton Watson as well. You know, Reggie Jackson's a vet who still can get buckets whenever you need someone to get a bucket, but the bench unit, there's not as much depth as before, and I hope Denver can get it back together. I'm hoping for more from Michael Porter Jr. He's been massively disappointing this season, so I hope we can get a little bit more from him. But so I understand why you have Denver there. They're still a very good team, obviously. Philly, you know, I don't love to be wrong, Kenneth. I don't love when I'm wrong, but I will always admit when I'm wrong. And I was wrong about Tyrese Maxey coming out of the draft. I was very wrong. I remember doing my scouting reports on him and thinking like, yeah, I mean, yeah, he's super quick. But I just didn't love the rest of his game, decision-making. He wasn't really a good shooter coming out of Kentucky. I just didn't love it. And damn, has he just proven me 100% wrong. He's exactly what you want in a partner with Joel Embiid. Like that, listening to the Zach Lowe podcast the other day. Hello, Zach, again, for like the 1 millionth time on this podcast. And there he was talking about how the biggest difference between James Harden and Tyrese Maxey is James Harden doesn't like to move at all. If he doesn't have the ball, he doesn't like to move. And Tyrese Maxey is motion is just constant motion, perpetual motion. He's so quick. He's always moving. And he's just the perfect guy to be paired up with Joel Embiid. And also Embiid has been a better facilitator with Tyrese Maxey as well. And Embiid's just, you know, he came off an MVP season and he's playing just as good, you know, maybe even a better passer at this point too. So yeah, Philly's really, really good. I still worry about the overall, again, like bottom end depth, or I'm griping about like the eighth man in a lineup, but you know, they're still a damn good team. Minnesota, I would put Minnesota above Milwaukee right now, just because of maybe chemistry issues with Milwaukee. And you know, they started to find their groove recently, but they did struggle a little bit at the start of the year. A lot of Milwaukee's future depends on Damian Lillard's health, which is it's pretty scary. You know, if you're a Milwaukee fan, I would be pretty scared about that, just because, you know, if you don't have Dame, you're really just rolling out Giannis and a bunch of old people in the same team minus Jrue Holiday that lost to Miami in the first round. I'd be a little worried. With Dame and Giannis together, they're fantastic. But I hope Dame stays healthy for Milwaukee's sake. Minnesota-wise, I was high on them after the Rudy Gobert trade. I feel like I was maybe a dissenting voice in the NBA Twitter sphere or blogosphere or whatever in terms of that trade. I thought it was a really good trade. I liked the fit of Rudy Gobert on Minnesota. And then last season, I was 100% wrong. This season, it's worked. He's been really good defensively. He's been the Rudy Gobert of old on the defensive end. Anthony Edwards has taken that leap forward that we know he could take, and Cass just being a supporting guy, which I think is how it should be with Anthony Edwards as your ball dominant play, just star, not just superstar. That's who he is. He's incredible. That Boston, you know, as you mentioned, it's just so stacked. So I don't have an issue with putting Boston at one. So yeah, I overall, I'm a fan of your top five.
Yeah, I think the one team to highlight, especially out of those five, it has to be Philadelphia. And it's because people probably felt like they were going to take a step back with Harden not being there. I think it's addition by subtraction. I think that it was never going to truly work. Harden truly needs a system designed for him. And when he's supposed to be your second best player, but he's playing with a center as the number one option, and then the third option is a scoring guard, then I just think that it was a terrible fit. And they got out at the right time. They added some pieces to make this a more well-rounded roster. That was one of the issues with Philly come playoff time. Once you got into that bench, it was ugly. And so adding that bit of depth, I feel a lot better about them in a 7-game series. I don't think that I like them enough to still be ahead of the Bostons and Milwaukees. To me, they're still the 1-2 of the East. But that being said, Philadelphia, they have surprised me in a good way. And I think it's great to see Tyrese Maxey getting that opportunity. I was kind of with you. I didn't see 27 points per game, certainly no. Coming out of college. I don't know who did. And if they did, maybe they deserve to be on some team scouting team. But I just think that they're a good team top to bottom. They're better coach now. I'm a firm believer that Doc Rivers is not a great NBA head coach.
Thank you.
Jury's still a little bit out on Nick Nurse. I think that he very much benefited from an injury-riddled playoffs to get his title, but I'm also a Toronto Raptors hater despite wearing a Toronto Raptors hat on this show. So that's kind of where I'm at with Philly. Now, 6 through 10, this is kind of a combination of, like, up-and-comers and just, like, steady teams because you've got Orlando at 6, Oklahoma City at 7, Dallas at 8, New York at 9, and the Lakers at 10. So any of those teams truly stand out to you? I gave the Lakers – I wanted to put them higher because, you know, they won the greatest championship of all time just a couple nights ago, but felt yeah. like it may be a little bit premature for the in-season tournament to be calling it that. So I kept them at 10, tempered my expectations a little bit. So what do you think of 6 through 10?
Off the jump, the biggest one is just having Orlando at 6. Again, we'll talk about them in a bit later, so I don't want to harp too much on them. I get why you have them 6th, just in terms of standing-wise record, net rating. Orlando's 5th in net rating. Their defensive philosophy is really impressive. They've gotten a bunch of 23-year-olds, really, like a bunch of people way younger than us, to buy in on the defensive side, and that's impressive. It's really, really cool to see that. Paolo Banchero is just awesome. He's so good. And Franz Wagner, he got off kind of to a slower start at the start of the year. He's starting to pick it back up and be the Franz Wagner we all knew he could be. Super efficient. Doesn't really make mistakes. Very reliable on both sides of the ball, mainly offensively. Let me know what you think about this comp. I think Franz Wagner is like peak Gordon Hayward. Does that make any sense to you?
That seems like his ceiling is Gordon Hayward, because like I don't think that anyone looks at Franz Wagner and thinks that if you're trying to go out and build a championship winning team that you could have him as your second option and you're going to win a championship. Could he be a strong third option, maybe a fourth option? I think that's more so where he falls, and that was quite frankly where Gordon Hayward was in his career. He had a couple great years in Utah, but you never viewed them as a title contender because he was their number one option at that time. So I like the comp there. I think that it makes sense. And I think what needs to be also laid out there is when it comes to power rankings, this has nothing to do with title odds. This has strictly to do with who's playing well right now. Because do I think that the Orlando Magic are the sixth best team in the NBA? No, but are they playing like the sixth best team? Yes, the record says that. The rating says that, like, it's just the reality of it. And, you know, we saw, I put out these rankings a few weeks ago, and Houston was up top 10 at the time because they'd won 6 games in a row. And they looked really impressive, and they beat teams like Denver. But then they come back down to earth a bit because that's the way that young teams operate in the NBA. So, like, Orlando being at 6, I don't know if that's sustainable, quite frankly, but at least as of right now, they're playing some phenomenal basketball, which Orlando has not been able to say that for a very long time.
Absolutely. I'm pretty happy for that fan base, happy for the franchise that they've actually found some form of success. I mean, like they haven't been good since the Dwight days. You know, they'd make an 8 seed every now and then, and they'd win a game against Toronto, or I think I remember them beating Toronto.
Those teams were just, you're like, they have no chance and they shouldn't be here, but there's just so many worse teams.
Yeah. So, you know, happy for them. Again, we'll talk about them in a bit. I think Dallas is interesting because they were at one point in the season, after I think maybe 10 or 15 or so games, they were the one seed in the West, and everyone was hyping up Dallas, talking about them, their defense, and how much improved they are on that side of the ball. And don't get me wrong, they are definitely improved on the defensive side, but they initially were pretty high up there in defensive efficiency, and all of a sudden they fall into 22nd. This is kind of where I thought Dallas would be. Health-wise is also a concern with Kyrie and Luka, for that matter. You know, I don't know if you could ever trust Kyrie to play 60 games in a season and Maybe he does, but I don't know if you can really ever trust it. Luka has his injury problems sometimes as well, and you're putting a lot of load on Derek Lively as your main starting center. So, you know, this is kind of where I expected Dallas to be. Still a good team, but, you know, they, like I said, they were the one seed in the West, and yeah. That just was never going to be sustainable. But yeah, I think your 6-10 makes sense. I'm surprised. I thought you have LA maybe a little bit higher. I think they are really good. What LeBron James is doing is absolutely absurd. We're all just kind of running out of adjectives to describe his play at this point. And Anthony Davis has been really good too.
I think the best way of describing LA is they're just that team that doesn't care about the regular season. Yeah. They cared about the in-season tournament, and you saw what that looks like when they really care about going out there. And I mean, this is a completely different Lakers squad than the one that got swept by Denver. Do I think that they're better than Denver yet? I still don't think that they are. But that being said, LA elevated a bit in the offseason, and Denver's downgraded a bit on the bench. So there is always the possibility that if those two square off in the playoffs again, then we could see a much different Western Conference Finals, let's say, if that's where they match up. But AD's always been inconsistent. LeBron at this juncture in his career, he can't afford to do that for 82 games, or quite frankly, he's not going to be playing an 83rd game. So Austin Reeves has looked good at times. Do I think that he should be a third option? Probably not, but that's what the Lakers are going to have to roll with, and they're going to need guys like Rui and Russell and others to step up. So I don't think that I'm going to put them any higher throughout the regular season, but it's because I think that they're gonna ride the wave throughout the regular season. And LeBron just cares about, I don't want to be in the play-in. If I'm a top six seed, I feel like I can go and beat any team on the road in a playoff series. And so I think that's kind of going to be where they're going to hang out. And because for them, it nothing about the regular season matters anymore. They won the in-season tournament, but they're focused on what the next chapter after that is. So,
yeah, I fully agree. All right, 11 through 15, right?
Yeah, 11 through 15. I'm so glad that we didn't talk about the Knicks because I hate talking about
them. Sorry, I mean, not even trying to.
You know what? I heard a great point on them the other day. The issue that New York will have, and they've never addressed it, is that they will always have the second or third best player in any playoff series in the Eastern Conference, and that's why they will be a consistently good, not great team. They're like the Raptors when the Raptors used to race and get a top three seed, but then we knew that LeBron was there, and we knew that Paul George was there, and all these other teams, and it's like, no one's worried about the Raptors with DeRozan and Lowry. We know that we have better players than those two, but I think that's kind of where the Knicks are going to fall. Brunson and Randle are fine, but they're not scaring anyone come playoff time.
No, their ceiling is a second round exit. That's their ceiling.
You'd consider and it has been for like another playoff series, but Knicks fans eventually they're going to be hungry for more than just a playoff series win. So Sacramento's 11, Indiana's 12. Miami at 13, Cleveland at 14, and Phoenix at 15. Any team there that you're maybe surprised is there, or maybe they haven't performed to the expectations that you had for them?
Well, I think Phoenix is exactly where I thought they would be. I was not high on them after the Bradley Beal trade. I've been on record with that. They are exactly who I thought they would be. They're so injury prone. And they're playing with a bunch of just minimum contract guys, along with KD, Brad Beal, and Devin Booker. So if either of them are hurt, which happens a lot, unfortunately for them, then it's basically two players and Yusuf Nurkic, and then a bunch of other random people. Like, that's what they are. It was weird to me, hilarious to me, over the offseason, seeing people try and hype up Keita Bates Diop in the signing of Yuta Watanabe to a minimum deal. And like, they're fine. They're fine players. But at this point, you're grasping for straws. That's what you're doing. You're trying to find some silver lining to a genuine lack of depth on this roster that will cost them throughout the regular season and come playoff time. The only way it doesn't cost them.
Do you think that they would have been better hanging on to Ayton, or do you think that he had to go, but they needed to get more for what he did?
No, I never thought that. I guess theoretically they'd be better hanging on to Ayton because they keep the assets, and they're not literally going 100 million% all in on winning a title tomorrow. So I guess in hindsight it was better to keep Ayton, but I understand why they make the trade. They're trying to win a title literally as soon as possible. They knew they couldn't do that with DeAndre Ayton with the way the roster was currently constructed, and I felt that way too. I've been one of the biggest Phoenix Suns haters in NBA Twitter for a while. Like I never thought, even when they made the finals, I was like, I don't buy that team as a real NBA title contender. And so I think they realized what I already knew, that they weren't good enough to win a title. So they tried to get Bradley Beal, another glitzy and glammy star to pair up with already their two superstars and Devin Booker and Kevin Durant. And they sacrificed genuine depth. And, you know, we're basketball fans. We follow the game. We know the game well. To win a title, you need a team to win a title. Like it takes a full roster. It takes depth. It takes contributions across the board to win a title in really any sport. And the Suns just don't have that. They don't have depth. They don't. They're not that great defensively, and offensively, they're great when they're all healthy. But that just doesn't happen.
And there's two things about Phoenix too. Firstly, ditching Monty Williams and then bringing in Frank Vogel and thinking that that was a wise decision, I'll never understand. Frank's won a title. Do we think that Frank won them that title, or do we think that it was, you know, the greatness of LeBron James and Anthony Davis that won them that championship? I think most people think the latter. And I just don't think that Vogel was the guy to put these pieces together. And he's never been able to do that when you have to kind of start from scratch, which is basically what Phoenix was doing. I know that KD and Booker were there, but once you're incorporating Beal, you're ditching Ayton, you're ditching a lot of the bench guys. You lost Chris Paul. There's a whole lot of turnover that they had there at the Chris Paul point. It was pretty good for them. But the second part of it is I think that the two teams that they have to beat in the West are the Lakers and the Nuggets. And they have no one that can defend who should be the best players for those teams, Anthony Davis and Nikola Jokic. I think that they are both going to eat them alive if they get to that playoffs. And I just don't see a scenario where they can beat those teams. You talked about the fact that they don't have depth. They certainly don't have front court depth, especially. You're leaning on Nurkic and who? There's literally no other piece that you can point to that you could say.
Drew Eubanks.
Oof. Tough.
That's it. Tough. I mean, Bol Bol. Come on, Kenneth. Don't forget about Bol Bol.
There's many sleepless nights that I've had where I've been struggling to forget about Bol Bol. So I think that it's a terrible, terrible conference for them to be in. And yeah, they grasped at straws. This is what bad organizations do, which is, let's face it, we know the disaster that has been the Phoenix Suns over the last number of years. They went on that run to the finals, and then they ran into Giannis and company and couldn't get it done. I don't think that they're getting it done with this group, but I'll give them a little bit more time. I still think that they're going to be a playoff team. We know that. You've got KD, you've got Booker, you've got Beal. Like, they're going to figure out a way to get into the playoffs, but I just don't think that they're going to make much noise after that.
Yeah, I fully agree. And don't forget Minnesota too. I mean, you're trusting Kevin Durant, or you're really trusting Kevin Durant to guard Anthony Edwards, and maybe you put Josh Okogie on Ant.
Can you imagine whole series of Bradley Beal or Devin Booker trying to cover Anthony Edwards? That would be so ugly. It honestly would remind me of the Doncic series, where they just had no answer.
Yeah. So I don't know. I Phoenix is who I thought they were, an above average basketball team. And I thought this is who I thought they were.
Star power will win you regular season games, but complete rosters are what gets it done in the playoffs, and that's just kind of where Phoenix is gonna.
Yeah, they win you regular season games if they're healthy.
Yeah.
So you know, like that, and that again, they're rarely healthy. I don't know off the top of my head how many minutes their big three has played together, but it can't be a lot. It can't be a lot of minutes that they've all played together. They're just never healthy at the same time. So I don't know. That's how I feel.
Okay. So then 16 through 20, we'll kind of rattle these ones off a little bit more. New Orleans, Houston, Atlanta, Brooklyn, and Golden State. Probably the biggest standout just because of the franchise name would be Golden State, but we know that that team's going to go as far as very old Steph Curry can take them. Klay Thompson's bad. Chris Paul isn't a great fit. Draymond Green is on the downturn. Just doesn't feel like – it felt like last year should have been the last run, and then they decided we're going to give it one more go. We're going to add Chris Paul to the mix, and that's going to be what – gets us over the hump. But any team for you out of those five that stands out?
Houston. I don't think any of us really expected them to be that good. Shout out to Ime Udoka and the defensive philosophy he's imparting on them. I think they are second in defensive rating. That's incredible. Like, that's a massive jump from last season where it was a bunch of young dudes who didn't really give a damn about defense. Like, they just were playing basketball to play basketball. And now they're genuinely good on the defensive end. Now, how sustainable is that? Probably not very sustainable, but shout out to them and having definitely an improved season. Shout out to Alperen Sengun. I've been a big Alperen Sengun fan for a while, and so I'm happy to see him play well. Atlanta, Atlanta's kind of getting... I didn't expect them to be ninth in the East right now, but I just never really bought into Atlanta as a true contender in the Eastern Conference this season. I guess, again, hello, Zach Lowe. I remember listening to his podcast before the season, and he had him. He was like, don't be surprised if they finish in the top four. And I remember yelling in my car, I'm like, Zach, what the fuck are you talking about? How in the world is Atlanta going to finish? I was like, that was one of the few times I've ever been like viscerally bothered by something he said. I was like, there's no way they finished top four, and they're not. They're not going to do that. They're just Trae Young is still really good, but the rest of that roster just doesn't really work well with him, and I just don't buy it. They're not. I didn't think that they'd be this bad, but I don't see them getting too much better than where they're at now. Golden State. Yeah, I've talked about this about Golden State on one of my great friends podcast, Marcus Savage, and shout out to everyone at Three of the Hardaway on that awesome podcast. I went on there a couple weeks ago, talked about Golden State, and like you said, Kenneth, you're relying on Stephen Curry 100,000%. Like, that's who you're fully relying on. Andrew Wiggins has not been good this year. Klay Thompson has not been good this year. Draymond Green he's not been good this year either. He just puts people in headlocks and just bitches and moans like he always does. It's Draymond Green. And now you're really hoping for something from Chris Paul, but like, what did you expect to get from Chris Paul? Like, and then nothing. Like, you expect him to come off the bench and like average like what, 5 points, maybe 9 points and 6 or 7 assists. That's cool, but is that going to help you win a championship? No, that's not going to help you win a title. So now they're in this like weird, awkward malaise of just being in the middle, and they got to figure out next moves. I don't think is Klay Thompson's contract up. No, I think they re-signed Klay already. Am I correct about that? You know,
I don't know if they have signed him or not. I felt like he was maybe the one that they signed him a few years ago. Then he got hurt, and then I don't know if they've extended him beyond this season. And I mean, I can't imagine that they will.
They have not.
There's no point.
So his deal ends after this season, that he's unrestricted. I don't think there's any way he gets a lot of money, at least from Golden State. You know, maybe some other team will give him money, but not from Golden State.
Truly, who wants Klay Thompson at this juncture of his career? Because I don't know what he brings to the table anymore. I truly don't. Like, I love Klay. He was one of my favorite players for a long time. I'm looking at a guy that's averaging 16-4-2 on 40% shooting and 35% from three. What is the what is the market value for that? Because I can't imagine that it's high. And if you're signing him, it's not to a long-term deal because he's had all the injuries that he's had. You're signing him to probably two-year deal max. Maybe you give a third-year team option around that. But I don't think that there's a team out there. And if there is, it's probably a young team that just wants him to come in and play the veteran role. And honestly, so you touched on Houston, and I think that this – the way that Houston has looked early in the season could be a learning experience for some of these teams near the bottom. So I'm going to list the last 10 teams because I want to reference some of them in what I'm about to say. Yeah. So Toronto's 21, then it goes Clippers, Chicago Bulls, Charlotte Hornets, Utah Jazz, Memphis Grizzlies, Portland Trailblazers, Washington Wizards, San Antonio Spurs, and then the lowly Detroit Pistons. Now, some of the teams at the bottom, the Detroits, the San Antonios, the Charlottes, and the Washingtons, they have gone scorched earth on having any sort of veteran presence in their locker room. They have just said, we got a couple young guys. We're going to play them 40 minutes a night. They're going to learn as they go. Now, Houston did that last year. And where did that get Houston last year? Bottom team in the NBA, bottom three team. So what did Houston decide? Well, we got young guys that we like. So we're going to go out and we're going to add some veteran guys. And we're going to sign them to higher paying contracts, but not long-term paying contracts. And they're going to mentor these guys. Because everyone killed the Rockets for Fred VanVleet contract. It was like 3 years, $130 million. Dylan Brooks got paid. Deservedly so. I mean, he's one of the best wing defenders in the NBA. People may hate him for his antics. He's one of the best wing defenders in the NBA. So you're going to teach them how to A, win with Fred VanVleet and Dylan Brooks, quite frankly. He won at a high level in the league, and you're going to teach them how to defend. And now we're starting to see them. Those players have elevated a little bit. Not all of them, but some of them have, to a higher level. Sengun's played a lot better. Jalen Green's playing better. Jury's still a little bit out on Jabari Smith. I saw him in Summer League, and he impressed me, but he looked like one of those guys where he knew that he was one of the best players on the court, so he was going to show it, but start showing it now against true NBA rosters. So when you look at the other teams, the Detroits and the Washingtons, who's their veterans? That they don't exist. This idea that we have to fill our roster with young guys so we can see them develop. Well, who's teaching them to develop? Because if you're relying just on coaching to do it, I don't think that that's the way to do it in the NBA. There has to be guys there that are going to make them consummate professionals, have them in the gym, like truly working on their game. And I think that's what Fred and Dylan bring to the table for a team like Houston. And we're starting to see now that team is starting to progress. Now, are they going to go and win a playoff series this year? No. But are they going to show strides, win another 10 or 15 games, look significantly better? Yes. What are we seeing from the Pistons? They've lost 20 in a row, is it? Like 20 straight games in the NBA is very hard to lose. And not many of them have been close. It's not even as if they just keep losing on buzzer beaters. I looked the other night and I'm like, that's a 30-point trailing in the third quarter game. That's crazy to have that happening. But these teams just, they don't prioritize veteran leadership anymore. And I think that's why we're seeing even a guy like Wemby. I feel so bad because, like, who's the veterans in San Antonio? There's not really a ton. So I don't know. What are your thoughts on it?
Detroit's only vet is really Bojan Bogdanovic. That's really it. They have Alec Burks, but, like, I don't know if this is not shade against Alec Burks, but I wouldn't consider him like a veteran leader or anything.
What's
like that?
The big moments in Alec Burks' career, hitting a couple of shots in a 5-game loss to the Atlanta Hawks when he was on the Knicks. Like,
I don't know. It's weird. I guess as we're talking about the Pistons, the only bright side for me about the Pistons is Osar Thompson. I am in love with him as a basketball player. And kind of going on a, we just talked about Monty going from leaving Phoenix. Now, well, he coaches Detroit, and it's got to be a really tough it's got to be one of the hardest transitions as an NBA coach to go from coaching a championship contender 1 year, then the following year going to a completely different team, completely different city, completely different everything, to a team that's tanking. That's not trying to contend. That's trying to build a future. That's trying to rebuild. That's got to be the hardest thing to do as a coach in the NBA. That mental switch has to be so difficult. And this is like them losing 20 in a row, I don't think is an indictment on Monty Williams as a coach at all. It's just, it's got to be hard. Like, I feel for him. I feel for the job that he has. This can't be easy at all. The rotations that they've had have also been just really confusing. Again, as someone who loves Oscar Thompson, he went from playing like damn near 30 minutes a game, being a consistent starter, to and being an absolute spark plug on the defensive side. Talk about Tyrese Maxey and constant movement. Constant movement on the defensive side is Oscar Thompson. Like that's all he does is sniff things out, be five steps ahead of the other team, the guy he's guarding. He'll lock down anybody. He's athletic. He'll rebound. He'll block shots. He'll do it all on the defensive side. And then, like, the past, like, four of the past five games, because last night he played a lot of minutes, but the games before, he played, like, 12 minutes a game. And I'm like, what the hell are we doing? Why? And I know a couple of them, he was in foul trouble, but I was so confused. Like, I'm not going to sit here and say I watch a lot of Pistons basketball. But I'm like, I'm confused. I'm a little confused sometimes by how rotations are handled. But look, you're losing 20 games in a row. You're going to try and tinker and try to find a way to win a basketball game. So maybe that's why. But yeah, those are, I guess, the rest of my thoughts on Detroit.
I just think that there's so many teams that have mailed it in, and it's almost blatantly obvious that they've mailed it in, and we're only 25 games into the season. And it's sad to see. I mean, I can't imagine going and watching the Washington Wizards right now, because Jordan Poole is a disaster. He's got culture problems. He's got "this is my team" problems, because when you're that bad, no one should be saying it's my team, especially not if you're like, if you're the number one pick, number two pick, fine. Like, if this is going to be your team, fine. They brought in Jordan Poole kind of just because they could. Not that they needed him, because they weren't trying to win anyways, but it's sad to watch. It's sad to watch him and Kuzma strolling every night, acting like they're top guys in the league and they're going to win 25 games. I don't know. I think that it's a lot more obvious in the way that rosters are constructed nowadays when there's not those guys there. I think that there's plenty of guys who are not signed on rosters that could be brought in and actually try and help some of these young guys get better. But, I mean, you talked about Monty Williams. I agree the rotations have been bad. I don't know what rotation you can run with the roster construction that they have and actually in basketball games. Like, because even if you roll Cade, Ivy, Thompson, whoever, like, there's just not a lot of substance there. So the one team that, I mean, I think we got to talk about the elephant in the room, the Grizzlies. I was going to have you on my show because Chris and I kind of ripped him to shreds about a month ago. And I think it's fair. I mean, this team has not performed how they should. I know Jaw is out, but no Steven Adams. They didn't bring back Brooks. Like, it feels like the roster's kind of deteriorated slowly over the last couple of years when I would have liked to have seen it try to improve. I think they were hoping, and Bane's been great this year. I think that he's had some stellar performances. They were hoping that Marcus Smart would kind of bridge that gap, losing a guy like Brooks, and I just don't think that he's been a great fit so far. But give me your thoughts on Memphis. Where are they at?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Smart's been hurt with an ankle thing, so he's missed the past 3 weeks or so. He should be back hopefully next week. I thought he's been actually a really good fit when he does play. So I didn't have an issue with that. It's just injuries with Smart and injuries with the whole roster in general. You know, knock on wood, the healthiest players have been Jaren Jackson and Desmond Bane, and that needs to continue. Again, knock on everything, really. And when Ja comes back, hopefully he stays healthy and has a really good season. You know, that's it. Just so many injuries.
Do you think
what could go wrong?
Too far gone at this point when you're sitting at 6-16, or do you think if he comes back and Smart gets healthy, that this is a team that, I mean, fully knowing that you have to get to the 10 seed. You have to get to the 10 seed to have a chance. It's not as if the Western Conference is a spitting image of spectacular teams, especially when you already know that San Antonio, Portland, probably Utah are going to be behind you. So you just have to leapfrog a couple of teams here. I will say this much. When Chris and I ripped them, Chris said that they weren't going to have 5 wins by the time Ja came back, and I said that I thought that was kind of crazy. And they're already sitting on 6, so he's already wrong on that.
Woo!
Yes, 6 wins. But if they can figure out a way to get to 8 by the time he comes back, then you start to talk about it as, okay, go and play above 500 basketball the rest of the year, and you're going to have a chance at a play-in spot. So I think that Memphis – Do you agree that the roster's kind of deteriorated slowly over time?
Yes, I've made that point many times on Twitter and again on my friends' pod, Three the Hard Way pod as well. My biggest qualms and issues with the Grizzlies are not the players. It's not the coaching. I know a lot of people in Memphis have issues with Taylor Jenkins. I don't really have issues with Jenkins personally. And I don't think this is on the players. I think they're playing as hard as they possibly can. There's just not a lot of talent on this roster right now. So whose fault is that? And I think it's the front office's fault. Like that, as someone who has been a Grizzlies fan my whole life, who has been through the Chris Wallace era, the Jerry West era, just really horrible management. There's one more guy, I'm forgetting his name. I've even met him. Jason Levine, I think that's his name. Jason Levine era. So I know what it's like to follow this team and have poor management. And I also know what it's like to follow this team and have Zach Kleiman, who won Executive of the Year 2 years ago, as our GM. And it's amazing. It's a blessing to have him as our GM. But let's take off the rose-tinted glasses for just a moment. Just a moment. Because the past 2 seasons, all of us in Memphis have been wondering, when are they going to make this home run move? They have so many draft picks. They have movable contracts, and you have that combination that should equal a home run trade for a superstar, a true superstar to complement Ja, Jaren, Desmond. Like, they had the assets to go get somebody and not sacrifice Jaren or Desmond. I believe that. Now, I'm not a GM. Did they try and make those trades? I think they did. I think they tried to make those trades. But then now it goes down to, how did we get to where we are now? We got to where we are now because they decided to draft David Roddy and Jake LaRavia instead of utilize those picks to trade for a veteran or someone who complements the roster better. They thought that they can replicate value with young guys. That's why they let go of Kyle Anderson. That's why they let go of De'Anthony Melton. They thought they could replicate the value. That's what they did, because they held themselves to such a high esteem as a player development management. Like that's who they thought they were. They hit on Desmond Bane. They hit on Brandon Clark. I think they've hit on Santi Aldama. He's been actually really good, and he was a second-round pick. So that's hitting on a second-round pick, no question. But that doesn't mean you're not going to get a big head and think you can hit every time.
Yeah.
You know, we played blackjack in Vegas. That's not how gambling works. Like, you can't just hit every time. Like,
if we're comparing the Memphis drafting to our playing of blackjack in Vegas, then they've bungled this roster to a point that potentially, who would we compare them to? The Washington Wizards, I guess. It was quick. It was fun, but it's not something that I want to do all the time. That's the explanation of the Wizards.
There you go. But that's what they did. They really wanted to replicate value in young guys. In hindsight, it's 2020. But looking back, that was clearly the wrong decision. clearly the wrong decision. Because now Jake LaRavia doesn't even play for the team. He's a G League guy who doesn't really play. David Roddy is just not that good. I know Memphis fans can get adored by David Roddy because he'll have a really good game one day. And you see on Memphis Twitter, big body Roddy, big body Roddy. And then the next like six games, he's ass. And no one really talks about it because people are hoping that either David Roddy or Ziaire Williams, God rest his soul, Ziaire Williams, he's not even dead, but he like God rest his soul, that hoping that those guys develop into the wing of the future for the Memphis Grizzlies. And it just hasn't happened. They, again, you even talk about Ziaire. They traded up to get Ziaire Williams, and that was a total mistake, just 100% a mistake. They could have kept their pick and got Trey Murphy to third. They could have got Trey Murphy, and look how good Trey Murphy is for the Pelicans right now. He's damn good. He's coming off an injury, and he's trying to get his feet back, but last year, 40% from three, slasher, athletic, can guard as well. That's a great player. And Memphis could have had him, but they decided to trade up and get Ziaire Williams, which was 100% a mistake. And now we kind of just have to figure out what's next. Does the front office now keep those young guys and hope and pray that they develop? Or do they get to the trade deadline and they realize, like, look, We gotta cash in these chips, no matter how small they are, no matter how little value they are. We gotta get something back because this is not it. We can't just keep hanging on and hanging on and hanging on. We gotta get some veteran guy. We gotta get some other scorer off the bench. Like that's the biggest. That's one of the bigger issues with the Memphis. They just don't have anyone without Ja Morant who can just purely score and just create penetration going downhill. Desmond Bane can score, so obviously, but he's not a put pressure going downhill type of scorer.
Yeah.
He's a perimeter scorer who can use up fakes and use his strength to blow past hard contests on the perimeter. That's the type of dude he is. He can also handle the pick and roll, and I'm not trying to sell Desmond Bane short. He's incredible, but they're lacking guys who can put pressure on the rim. You know, I think injuries have played a factor. No Brandon Clark. No Steven Adams have obviously affected a lot of things. No Luke Kennard for a long period of time as well. That's another guy from three that Memphis is missing. But to go to your original question, and I went on a really long tangent, but to go to your original question, can they get to the play-in? Yeah, I think they can get to the play-in. And I think that's their ceiling right now, is being a play-in team. And if you're a healthy Memphis Grizzlies, and you're in the play-in, and say you make it out of the play-in tournament, so you're the 7th seed or the 8th seed or whatever seed you are, you have a first-round matchup against, say, Minnesota, say it's Denver, or you know whoever it may be. I wouldn't want to face Memphis at as close to full strength as possible. You know, no Steven Adams or maybe Brandon Clark, but you know, as close to full strength as possible. No way in hell I'd want to face Memphis in the first round. You know, with a motivated Ja Morant, Jaren Jackson Jr. playing better, Desmond Bane playing like an all-star, no way in hell. And I think as a Memphis fan, that's kind of all we can hope for, is that they can get the play-in, that Memphis can go on a bit of a run when Ja Morant comes back, and we'll see where the dice rolls.
Yeah, I would agree. I don't think the ship has sailed yet. I think that there's plenty of teams ahead of them even that are going to come back. Like, I think Houston will fall back, and quite honestly, I think one of Golden State or the Pelicans is going to fall back. I just don't think that the roster construction for either is really great. So that's kind of where I see it going. So those are the 30 teams that I have. I know that we should talk about who's a team that could move to the opposite side. Because let's say we got 1 through 15 on the left, we got 16 through 30 on the right. So who's a team on the left for you that's going to kind of come back down to earth and they're going to find themselves on the right side by the time the season's said and done?
I kind of just took the easy bait and I just said Orlando, just because, again, preseason projections, are they going to sustain this for the entire season? I mean, look, you got to remember at this point in the year, like last season, New Orleans was like the one seed in the West. And then they finished out. I don't even think they made the play-in. I might be wrong. I'm kind of tired and hungry, so I might be wrong. Maybe they didn't make the play-in. But So it's early. I'm happy to see Orlando playing good basketball, but I do think when push comes to shove at the end of the year, they'll be a play-in team. So I think Orlando can drop into that bottom half. Indiana as well is a team that I picked. And at that point, I'm kind of grasping for straws because I like Indiana a lot. Tyrese Haliburton is just absurd. He's an absurd basketball player. And that team is super well coached as well. So I'm kind of grasping for straws, but I just don't really buy the rest of the roster. But Tyrese is so good. I mean, he keeps playing at this level. Why not? Like, it's just, they're incredible. And then the other team I had was Miami. At some point, I have to be correct at Miami not being that good. Like, at some point, I say it every year that they're not going to be that good. And at some point, I have to be correct. Like, it's got to happen at some point in time that Miami is not going to be that good. And right now, they're fine. Yeah. They're a fine team. But when I say not that good, I mean like bottom play in, or maybe missing the play in altogether. It's got to happen. Maybe it won't. Probably won't, because Eric Spoelstra is an amazing coach, and that's just not in their DNA. They're always going to keep playing hard. But those are my three picks. What about you?
They feel like the Steelers of the NBA, where just, and Spoelstra is just Mike Tomlin until he's gone. You just kind of give them the benefit of the doubt. But I've seen a lot of rumors of them being buyers. I've been seeing those rumors for about as long as Miles Turner has been on the trade block in the NBA, which is a very long time, because it seems like every trade
is so long.
Miles Turner's always there. So I did have Indiana there as a potential team. I do think that Halliburton's been spectacular. I think they hit a gem with Mathurin. Like, I think that they're starting to build something there. I still think that they're the kind of team, and I was going to include the Knicks here as well, because they've been a really healthy team as well. In the long 82-game schedule, I think that if there were teams who would sustain injuries and maybe not be able to play at a high level going through them, those were the couple of teams that I was looking at, because I think if Halliburton misses any time, even if it's a couple weeks, I just think that that's a team that's losing the majority of their games. Now, that's easy to say, you lose a superstar player, but I think they're different because they don't have a lot of depth. Like, once you get outside of the starting lineup of Indiana, you start to shake your head a little bit. Same with the Knicks. I mean, and if you look at the Knicks, like, pretty much everyone has been healthy. That they just had Mitchell Robinson go down for a few weeks. So
big loss. More than that, 6-8. That's a big loss.
And that's what I mean. So, yeah, that's one injury. But if another one comes, then that's just a team that I'm concerned about all the time, because they have such a fine margin to be a top eight team in the East as is. And I think that any sort of injuries, that's going to hurt them. And then Orlando, obviously, I think it's just, you look at them, I'll compare them to the Texans of the NFL. Like, they're playing outside their depth. They were only supposed to win like six games, and then they're sitting at seven wins already. And you're like, what the hell are they doing? They'll probably come back down to earth. Like, they'll still exceed their expectations. They might hover around 500 by the time the season's done. But I wouldn't include them in the top eight in the Eastern Conference discussion. I think it's just a hot start, and we'll have to see. I mean, Paolo, I mean, I'm obviously a Duke fan, love Paolo, thought that he was the best player in that draft. Obviously he gets taken by Orlando, and that's exciting for them that they have a potential franchise altering guy in their room. Now, teams on the right side, the only one that I kept coming back to, honestly, was I always come back to the Clippers, and I'm like, when the hell are they just going to do something? You're just poking at them, and it's always, well, they've got Kawhi, they've got Paul George, and it's like, okay, what else do they got? Well, they got old James Harden and Russell Westbrook, and they've got Zubac, and they've got Terrence Mann. I'm like, okay, like that's a little bit of something. Like, it seems like they could win games, but I just don't know how that all fits together. I still think that they're going to figure out a way to be on the left side by the end of the year. They'll go on a stretch where Kawhi will play at an MVP-type level for like five or six games, and they'll go on a big win streak. But I'm maybe just giving them the benefit of the doubt because it's Kawhi, more than anything else. I mean, Paul George and Harden and Westbrook, they're all fine, well, and good. But I think that this has always been if Kawhi is healthy, then we know what he can do. So the Clippers was the one for me on the right. Any for you?
No, Clippers was my big one. I kind of just threw a bone to Atlanta just because there's still talent on the roster. I said before, I don't really buy the depth, but there's still talent on the roster, so maybe they could get hot and make it to the upper half of the NBA power rankings. But yeah, LA was my big one as well. You know, a lot of the issues with the Clippers that have been discussed before have slowly started to go away, and a lot of that is kind of just a better understanding of how to play with James Harden. You know, Kawhi, I still think this is Kawhi's team. And you're talking about that run that he's on. He had 34-6-5, you know, their last game against the Blazers. And he just looked like Kawhi. He just looked amazing. And, you know, I think they'll figure it out. But, like, what does figure it out also mean for the Clippers? Like, be a 7 seed in the play-in or make it out the play-in, be like a 6 seed? Like, I still don't think their ceiling is that high. But I think there's still talent there, and they're slowly starting to right the ship. I mean, in net rating, they're sixth, I think, in net rating right now. So, you know, they're definitely up there in terms of teams, and I think they will eventually figure it out and get to a better place in their overall positioning. So we'll see what happens with the Clippers. I wanted to again say Memphis, but it's going to be such a big jump. Like, it'll take something. It'll take Ja Morant playing at an otherworldly level, you know, being the second team All-NBA type Ja Morant for Memphis to make that big of a leap. You know, would I love to see that happen? Of course. Do I think it'll happen? Probably not. So, yeah, the Clippers are really my big one as well. I'm not buying Golden State, not buying Toronto. Then really nobody else.
Toronto are going to be sellers at the deadline, because every year since Kawhi left, it's been, when are they going to sell? When are they going to sell? And we saw Siakam, they're potentially shopping him. Like, it's funny because every year it changes. Last year it was, well, Siakam's untouchable and Barnes is untouchable and OG's untouchable. And now it's, well, Barnes is probably the only untouchable one on this team. Everyone else on this roster we could probably get rid of. And they're finally starting to realize that they should have blown it up years ago. And now they're in the purgatory of being mid, like just the migatory. They're the migatory of the NBA, of just being in there with Atlanta and Indiana and all these other teams that don't have a real chance of winning a championship, but they don't want to lose the season ticket sales by completely blowing it up and going into a rebuild, because they're very fair weather basketball fans up here in Canada. And now they're where they're at, and they should have done it years ago. So that's my
record. I'm really fascinated about what the, if I think I agree with you. I think Toronto will be sellers at the trade deadline. And if that's the case, I'm really curious what Pascal and OG, what they're going to commit, or Gary Trent as well. Now, Gary Trent has not been very good this year. And, you know, he had his moments where he looked like a really good NBA player, really good shooter, a solid two-way guy. But I'm curious what their value is going to be. Because like you said, it has fluctuated throughout the past couple of years. And if there are sellers, you know, I'm intrigued what they could get for those guys. So we'll see.
You can definitely revamp relatively quickly, knowing that you have Scottie Barnes there. But again, it's it's got to be soon. They cannot wait another year or wait for the off season to do it. I think you make deadline moves. I think you finally mail it in, say we're not very good, and you get a top pick. I know this is not supposed to be a great draft, but get a higher pick, give yourself an opportunity to get a guy to pair alongside Barnes and make a real run at this, because it's just sad at this point, knowing that they're going to win like 35 to 40 games and somehow have some sort of excitement around them.
Yeah, I feel you. We'll see what happens with Toronto. So, you know, we've gone through your 30, we've gone through your power rankings, we did the left, right, and, you know, as we close out the pod, I'm going to put you on the spot, Kenneth. I need your NBA Finals prediction and NBA champion. Put you on the spot. I need it. And this will be binding. Like, if you're wrong, I will fly to Canada and egg your home. Okay? So this is so you can't get this.
So if someone gets their ACL tomorrow, tough. Like,
that's tough. Sorry.
Okay. Well, I got to take that into account. I wish I had more time to call some team doctors here, but
you got those connects? You just got like team medical doctors on speed dial?
Yeah, I've got connections like that. That's why I do a solo podcast, because I have all those connections.
Right, exactly.
This one pains me to say. I think the Celtics are going to come out of the East. I just think that starting five is so good, and even when you get into the bench, they've got some options there. I truly do believe that there's too many question marks with all these other teams. I don't think that Philly can get over the hump and beat Boston. I get concerned about Milwaukee with Lillard and Giannis, and who else is going to support them, quite frankly, through that. And Miami, yeah, they beat them in the East Finals last year, but they're a significantly better team than they were. And out West, I'm going to stick with Denver. I still think they have the best player in the world. I think that Jamal Murray, come playoff time, he doesn't care about the regular season. He's just ready to drop 30 in any given playoff series. I don't think that there's anyone out West that can truly guard him in a 7-game series either. So I think I'll go with Denver. And as much as it pains me to say, as a Laker fan, the Celtics will leapfrog us in titles, and they're going to take home that. I believe it's their 18th title. So I'm going to pick the Celtics to win it all.
Okay.
Well, we'll lock yours in too, if I'm in this legally binding contract.
Well, this is my podcast, so I don't have to do a dance.
I should have read the fine print before I
I don't have to say shit. This is my pot. I mean, no, I do think Boston comes out the East as well. And I just to be different, because like I do think Denver makes it out the West, because again, for the reasons that you mentioned, and I just don't buy OKC. They're too young. Like, teams that young, but I guess with the exception of no, teams that young just don't make it to NBA Finals or win a title. It just doesn't happen. So no, I just can't buy OKC doing it. I'll just to be different, I'll say Minnesota shocks the world and makes an NBA final, just because if they keep this up, they have the defensive scheme to bother Jokic. They really do. With Gobert playing like this, and you can throw Jaden McDaniels on Jokic too, and then who's gonna guard Ant on Denver? You know, are you gonna put Jamal Murray on Anthony Edwards? No. You're going to put Michael Porter Jr. on Anthony Edwards? No. You're going to put KCP on Anthony Edwards? No. Like, what are you doing? How are you going to guard him? And I think they match up pretty well against Denver. You can put
They're actually hoping that the Lakers take out Minnesota, because they match up significantly better with them.
Oh yeah. And if you're Anthony Edwards too, when he wants to, he can play really good defense. We've seen it in big moments. He can defend in big moments. He just doesn't always do it on a consistent basis, but he's athletic enough to do it. So, you know, put him on Jamal Murray, and you tell Anthony Edwards, like, yeah, go play defense on Jamal Murray. He'll do it. And I think he'll do a good job. So just to be different, I'm going to go Minnesota, going to go Boston, and I'll stick with Boston winning the NBA title. Unfortunately, you know, I'm not a Boston fan either. I grew up a Lakers fan, so it pains me to say that as well.
So much, so. And there will be no greater pain that I will experience in my life of fandom in the NBA than begging the Lakers to draft Jason Tatum as both a Laker fan and a Duke fan, and to have them pick Lonzo Ball and the team of him to go to, of all teams, being the Boston Celtics. Now I can never have a Tatum jersey, and it hurts me to my core that I cannot have that jersey, because he was my favorite Duke player outside of JJ Redick, and it's tough.
Yeah. Well, hey, you've had JJ Redick on your podcast, so maybe you can have Tatum on yours as well.
If I had Tatum on my podcast, I will buy Celtics gear. I'll full bore there winning the championship. Like, So, Jason, if you're listening, because you do have thousands of listeners, as I've said, so they're definitely going to all be DMing Jason saying that he needs to come on the Shooter Shoot Basketball podcast.
I agree. Tatum, he's told me he's an avid listener to the Up and Under. It means a lot to me. I don't know why he doesn't listen to your podcast. Maybe that's a personal thing, but maybe I can slide in a recommendation.
You know, knowing that, but it's fine.
You know, I'll slide in a recommendation to him. Said, "Hey, throw Kenneth a bone. Just get go on his pod for me. Do it for me, Jason. do it for me, Jason Tatum." But on that note, Kenneth, it's always great to have you, man. Be safe on your flight to Mexico. Please start to feel better soon. And you know, it's funny. You pump yourself with all these healthy things to get your throat feeling better, and then you're going to go to Mexico, and I'm sure consume a lot of unhealthy things.
No, so, I'm going to be on a diet the whole time. There's going to be no.
Oh, really?
Consumed? No.
Okay. Good Lord, man. I got worried. I worried for you for a second. I was like, damn. That sounds. Touche. Fair enough. Well, Kenneth, tell the people where they can find you, man.
I got multiple places, I guess, now. At HedgePod for a competitive hedge podcast. Been on a bit of a hiatus, but have been putting out betting picks daily. We went 4-0 today on betting picks. The Doncic prop hit, and then some NHL and college basketball plays hit. So join the Playbook HQ Discord. That's where I've got all of my plays over there. Over 400 members now in there. And then at Shooters_pod for Shooter Shoot Basketball Pod. Going to be back in the new year doing weekly power rankings. Going to adjust them a bit as the season goes on as well. Not the 1 through 30, but maybe focus a bit more on a tiered system. So I'm looking forward to that. But Francis, as always, appreciate you having me on. Glad that we finally got to get together once again, and I'll have to get you on in the new year.
100%, man. 100%. Everybody, thanks for listening to the podcast. Don't forget to give us 5 stars. Subscribe to the podcast. Can you even like? I don't think you can like a podcast, but if you can, like the podcast. Follow me on Twitter at Slugga Sports. Follow the podcast, Up and Under Podcast, on Twitter as well, or X, whatever the fuck you want to call it. But to everybody listening, until next time, peace.
Cool days, hot tops, when my blue face ice pops. I'ma make a shoelace, necklace. Yeah, we whipping pop song. Lexus, and I'm skipping school days. Mic drops, eyes on summer like Cyclops. Yeah, we falling off the sidewalk. Mama, what's a homeboy?